Vulnerable Podcast is a platform for open and transparent conversations. Each episode, I interview a guest who has experienced something that is very common to all of us, but they offer a unique perspective on how they gained spiritual insight and found strength in their vulnerabilities by owning their power. These conversations are authentic, raw, and unedited. As always, let us know how these conversations are benefiting you by engaging with us on social media by using the hashtag VulnerableConversations. Hi everyone, I'm Melissa Rochelle and this is another episode of Vulnerable Podcast. Today we have a lady by the name of Rachel Maddox who is on the phone all the way from San Diego and to talk about sex after trauma. And this is something that is actually quite personal to me, and I'll get into that into detail about that a little bit more in the episode. But Rachel, would you like to say hello?
Hi there, thanks for having me.
No worries, thank you. I wanted to kind of just go into a little bit more about what you do. I've been on your website and had a look at your bio just to kind of give the listeners a bit more of a like a round understanding of what you do. I've read this and it was really, really interesting. You said, after years and years of putting my scary sexual trauma at the very top shelf in the back room of my psyche, an emergency surgery on my vulva reactivated everything I'd been avoiding and forced me to get professional help. So you said you've been suffering for many years in silent ways. You had constant pain in your vagina, sexual choices that you weren't proud of, that your soul didn't desire or serve, secret addictions, tons of blocks around emerging as your true capacity as a leader, creator and a business person, and hidden anger and rage. And I think that's something that like a lot of people can identify with when it comes to underlying trauma and the way how it kind of like creeps into your subconscious and then out through your like daily life. You've gone in to say also that what you now know is that the secret science behind all of that is like this trauma spell and what that means for a lot of people that have been through trauma. So I would like to kind of just start off by asking, your work is around trauma and like embracing sex after trauma, but is that just, does that just stem from sexual trauma or is that any trauma at all?
Yeah, well, no, not just sexual trauma. I work with a lot of people who have maybe some kind of complex trauma, something that's less sexual but more like emotional abuse, manipulation, gaslighting. Mm-hmm. So I work with people who have different kinds of trauma. Most people who come to me are people who have sexual trauma because that's sort of the brand that I have.
Yeah.
But what people often discover is that it's developmental trauma or complex trauma, meaning more relational traumas like neglect or early exploitation or shame and repression or even oppression, mm-hmm. that create conditions for sexual trauma to be more likely later on if it didn't happen in childhood.
Okay, cool. That makes a lot of sense. So what is your backstory? Like, how did you come into the work?
Well, basically, like I wrote in the bio, I was really struggling. Like, I had tons of pain in my vulva. I was constantly kind of getting into these sexual situations that didn't feel great, but I didn't know how to manage my sexual energy safely. Like, I did not know how to be sexual and safe. So I would go back and forth between, like, celibacy and, like, slutting around, but not in a positive way.
Yeah.
But, you know, like these things, sexual trauma is really scary. And I had an early-ish history of sexual trauma from different kinds of, like, sexual assault when I was, you know, 10, 11, to then, like, actual rape, statutory rape by someone twice my age when I was 13. And so those things were things like I thought I had kind of dealt with. I was like, whatever, you know, I'm a strong woman. I'm independent. I'm powerful. I'm confident. Who cares? But all of these things were still happening in my life. Like, it was like the gap. It was like the link of issues. And it got so bad that I eventually developed vaginal melanoma, which is very rare and strange. It's skin cancer on my vulva. Like right on my clitoral hood, not fun. And so I had to have surgery, which was also not fun. And that surgery kind of spiraled me down into a pretty deep, depressive hole, but also all of my trauma was like super, super activated.
Right.
And at that point I was like, okay, I can't avoid this anymore. Like, I have to see someone. So I just asked around. I was like, what do you do if you have sexual trauma? And people pointed me to the Somatic Experiencing website.
Mm-hmm.
And Somatic Experiencing is a program and a modality developed by a man named Peter Levine. He's one of, like, the world's most renowned trauma specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And on that site, there's a place where you can find a practitioner near you anywhere in the world.
Okay.
So I found this woman named Bridget, and she became my, like, healer, and she also has her own training program. And after working with her for a few sessions, I was like, holy crap, like, 3 sessions with Bridget was like 3 years in therapy or whatever, you know. It was so powerful and so effective. So I took her training program, and in that time I also realized, like, gosh, so many people have trauma and don't know that they have trauma. Like, they don't know that that's why they're in this chronic stuckness.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are spending a lot of time and money trying to heal in ways that aren't necessarily the correct place.
Yeah.
So I became really, like, passionate about educating and about sharing the news. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I got in.
Yeah, and you said that, and I resonate with all of what you've just said, and, like, just listening to some of the feedback that came back when I did post about this episode. I had a voice note from a lady who was speaking about, like, when the trauma happened 15 years ago, she didn't acknowledge it to be traumatic, the same thing that you just said, and you were just like, oh yeah, I can get over it, I'm an adult, type thing. And yeah, as she's gone on in her adulthood, it's resurfaced and resurfaced and resurfaced, and I can definitely identify with that. For me, it happened like for a good while in my childhood, between the ages of like 11 and 16. And I never also didn't process it as something that was wrong at all. And I think there's something to be said in that. I'm going to ask you this, actually. Like, do you think that one of the reasons why, when sexual trauma in particular is happening to you as a young child or as a young girl, or maybe even a young boy, that we don't process it to be traumatic because we don't have the language to process it as traumatic or the emotional understanding to process it as traumatic? It's almost like it's an alien experience, and so therefore it's just completely random and you don't know how to process it, so it kind of just goes somewhere else in your mind. Do you think that's what it is?
This is such a good question. Nobody's ever asked me this. I think everyone has a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can't speak for everyone. But one thing that feels relevant to this question is the reality that sex is very natural.
Mm-hmm.
And sexuality is a core part of our nature as human beings. And so even when we're young, we are naturally sexual and sensual.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes what I've experienced and what I've heard other people experience is a confusion, because this natural part of them that might be newly budding or that might be just developing, or that they might have their own personal relationship with already, even as a young person, because some people really develop relationships to their sexuality early on.
Mm-hmm.
In like a private way, that there's a confusion that often happens, like, wait a second, I actually like this thing. I
yeah.
like my sexuality.
Yeah.
But something feels a little weird about this.
Yeah.
And that's the unfamiliar part. The part is like, me and my sexuality, that all seemed good and well, unless I'd been told as a kid, like, sex is bad via
mm-hmm.
religion or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, generally, if I didn't have the religious indoctrination, most people, whatever relationship they develop with their sexuality on their own is fairly positive. Like, as a kid, you know, I know for me as a little kid, I had my, like, 5-year-old game I played with my friends. Now, we did it in secrecy because sex and sensuality are kept in the shadows, which
mm-hmm.
is part of the problem. But still, it felt like a positive thing. It felt like secret, maybe a little bit bad, but ultimately, like, we were playing and we knew we were playing and it was okay.
Yeah.
So all of that to say, I think it's the combination of something that's natural, healthy, and good being exploited in a secret, shady way
yeah.
that actually confuses people and disorients people. And it's the disorientation that has people be like, well, maybe I don't need to deal with that. That was just kind of a fluke.
Yeah.
But then they keep having flukes
yeah.
and they're like, wait, oh, something's actually wrong.
Yeah, I'm literally just nodding my head furiously, like, that all of that makes sense. And I'm going to let you know a little bit, like, about what happened to me. So when I so after all of the abuse had happened, and I had, you know, I was about 19, and I'd started like a relationship, because I thought at this stage, you know, I'm fine, that it's not happening anymore, I'm just living my life now. And then we kind of that's when I first became sexually active. And what had happened when that was happening is that I didn't feel anything, like, at all. And after a bit, I was like, I think literally, because I was 19, I was like, I think my body's broken, like, actually. And I remember having that simple thought, like, I think it's just broken. I think that maybe I'm one woman that has this thing, out of all the women in the world, that means that my whole body doesn't work in that way. And so, but what I didn't connect it to was the abuse, the sexual abuse. So in England, we have this thing called, we have sexual health clinics called The Brook, and anyone can just walk in there under 25. So I walked into the clinic and I was like, yeah, I think my vagina's broken. I need to speak to someone about, like, how, what I'm supposed to be doing in order to kind of make it work, literally. And the lady who I saw, the first question that came out of her mouth was, have you ever been sexually abused? And because, like, I'd never even thought about it in that way. I think I was in so much shock. I just said yes. Like, it just came out of my mouth before I could tell myself to say no. And then she then went on to explain that exactly what you just explained. When you're young and it's very natural and your body reacts in a very natural way, but over time it shuts down because it's not something that he wants to experience. And maybe that's where you are. So if you can imagine, this is like a 10-minute conversation and my whole world has been, like, turned upside down. And I leave the office and I'm like, okay. She didn't say, if you want therapy, come back next week. We can sign you up with, like, this we have this thing in where I'm from called the Rape and Sexual Violence Project. We won't sign you up with RSVP. There was nothing like that. It was just a case of, that's what it is, babe. I'll see you later. And I was like, I walked away and I didn't really address that conversation or anything in my mind for probably a good 8 to 10 years. So, and now I'm starting to understand how weighty that conversation was and what that potentially means for so many other young people that don't really know that that's how, you know, that sex is a positive thing, that your body is going to react naturally. And that's what kind of happens subconsciously when it happens over and over and over again. It's like the whole fight and flight thing. Do you see what I'm saying? It's more a case of, like, your body just... Well, it's not about fighting or flighting. It's like, it's not fighting and it's not flighting. It's just shutting down instead.
I can speak to that a little if you want.
Yeah, yeah, I would love you to.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's interesting because I had a similar experience at an acupuncture clinic or whatever where someone asked me if I'd ever been... you know, sexually abused or assaulted or whatever. And it was the first time a professional had ever asked me that. And I was maybe 25 and it was actually on a form. So I just checked yes. And it was a man. It was a friend of mine. Actually, he was like trying to get clients or something. I don't know, whatever. I went and he was the first professional to ever be like, you know, you can get professional support for that. And I was like, you know, and I didn't want to deal. But so I'm sure, you know, we're not the only ones who have some kind of story like that. Although I do wish your lady had been like, you're 19 here. Let me help you out a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And especially now, I mean, you know, I work in a field where I now work with people who experience all types of things. And it's a very natural thing to say after someone said something like that. But I suppose it's like, and that's another thing. A lot of people that go into work helping people have come from a place of like trauma themselves. Yeah, definitely. So I wanted to move on to like, so I know from my personal life, but I wanted to kind of just like see what you think about what are some of the common themes that come out of sexual trauma in the women that you've worked with. Like what are the top like reoccurring presenting themes in people's lives?
Well, let's see. So a lot of the things that people come to me dealing with. One is, you know, one of the big things I see is people really trying to figure out and heal their trauma in their mind.
Yeah.
So they're like, I've been doing my mindset. Like, I'm trying to force myself to have sex with my partner and it's not working. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people are experiencing that shutdown you were talking about, which might be like a freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a lot of women that I work with will move between hypersocialization and freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So fight and flight. So we have four automatic responses in our body to perceptions of threat. There's actually more, but these are the four most common.
Okay.
The first one's hypersocialization.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you try to like make everyone else around you feel safer so that you're safe.
Right. Yeah, that makes so much sense. Oh my God.
People pleasing, but it can also look a little bit like hypervigilance. So mm-hmm. always looking for any problems that might come so that you can prevent the problem.
Yes.
And a lot of women play these roles of hypersocialization and hypervigilance. It's an automatic response. It's something your body decides to do immediately. It's not like a psychological thing. It's a physiological response to perceived danger or threat.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's fight or flight. If your body's like, nah, that won't work, then you might move toward a perceived violation with like anger and rage, or run from one with fear and, you know, thrill and terror. And then there's freeze. So if your body says, well, no, the fight won't work because I'm smaller than this person, or the flight won't work because I'm slower than this person, then you might go into an automatic freeze response. And there are lots of layers of freeze. There's camouflage, where you become kind of invisible.
Yeah.
There's like the deer in the headlight, like a shock freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's possum, where you play dead, where you're like totally gone, where you leave your body in a way so that you don't have to feel the perceived pain or violation of what's happening. So a lot of women who come to me, a lot of people who come to me, some of the things I see them talking about are like lots of anxiety, which might be based like due to hypersocialization or hypervigilance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people also saying like, I don't feel anything, mm-hmm. right? Like my vagina's broken, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. So that might be like a deep freeze state, like my vagina's frozen. You know, it's in that, it's still in the dissociative state from back when that thing happened that I never completed.
Yeah.
I never resolved. A lot of people experience either hypersexuality or hypo. So like having a lot of sex that isn't necessarily aligned, or having no sex. People have the issue of like not being able to use their voice, not feeling like they have choices.
Yeah.
So there's so many things, but no voice, no choice, shame around their sexuality, hypersexuality or hyposexuality, anxiety, and then also like chronic fatigue and exhaustion is big too, because when your system's always responding to a perceived emergency, it's exhausting. It
yeah.
does a number on your kidneys and your adrenals.
Wow.
So a lot of those kinds of chronic fatigue and chronic illness can be traced to trauma.
I can confidently say I've had a mixture and have a mixture of all of the above.
Yeah.
Quite like, I don't know, my sense of humor comes from having to like manage all of this and then kind of still kind of press through in life. But definitely for me, one of the biggest things that you said is the voice thing. And that's another thing that literally last year I realized to be a thing. So I went to an event and there was a lady who was talking about how she had been sexually abused and how she realized that he had taken away her voice, and how she tried to rediscover her voice by singing and going to choirs. And I was just like, wait, what? It took away your voice? And then I had to think about, outside of the fact that I talk a lot, I always kind of don't feel like I speak up at the moments when I'm supposed to be speaking up.
Mm.
So in positions like when you said talking about leadership and anything that kind of puts me out there to kind of say, this is what I'm doing and I am very, very good at it. I think it goes back to what you were saying about being not seen, because when you're seen, then you can become a victim to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Totally. So there's loads of that, and obviously it's at varying degrees for different people, because I have this podcast and I'm on this platform, but this has taken a very long time for me to even be able to get to this point of just talking.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm trying to do, is like I say find my voice, but like not only find my voice in safe spaces like this, but find them in spaces where it actually matters outside, with people that potentially I may have seen to be a threat beforehand. And I want to make it clear and say, like, not a threat in terms of sexually, but just energetically. So yeah, I know that is definitely something that I can 100% like understand, and I've definitely been through.
Yeah, well, I actually have a short practice around that if you want to hear it.
Yeah, of course.
Well, and also I want to say congratulations, because like, it is a really big deal that you've got this podcast and you're using your voice, and you're not just using your voice in a way where you're asking questions, but you're really sharing a lot. And so I just want to celebrate you. I think it's a huge deal, and it's good to stop and celebrate where we've come and where we've come from. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. And like, before I came today, I was like, How much am I gonna share? Because I know what I know about my experience, but I also know that one of the biggest things that people say about me all the time is, "Oh, you're so strong. You have it together. You did it." I don't project that. I don't feel like I do, but I feel like that's what people see when they see me, or if they hear me, or if they see me on social media. And I know it's the complete opposite, and I also try not to project it. So it's one of those things where it's a case of like, okay, so when I start to talk about these things, it's almost like I think I'm kind of protecting other people's worlds and their thoughts about me, if that makes sense. Because I'm very clear in everything that's happened, and it's something that I'm never like hid away from, or more recently I haven't hidden away from when it comes to talking about it. But at the same time, I know that if I was completely explicit and said loads of things, and people would be like, "Oh my God, like, how, like, I thought you had a perfect life." And I'm just like, nobody told you that.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, you know, that's great awareness, because one of the things is that this is obviously really sensitive territory. So just if anybody's listening and you've experienced sexual trauma, just know that you're allowed to, like, even what we've shared already can be a lot of information without telling explicit stories. So if at any point you're like, "I need to pause this," or "I'm feeling overwhelmed," like, just know that that's really, really, really normal. I work with tons of people in this territory. Even just hearing about hypersocialization, fight, flight, and freeze can be like,
it's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot, because your body is always listening. So your body might be getting the cue of like, wait, someone finally acknowledged what's going on with me. And it could be too much for your system. So just know that if this is an overwhelming conversation to listen to,
pause and come back to it.
Yeah.
When you can.
Yeah. So two things real quick. One is this thing about people thinking you're brave, kind of, or whatever. Yeah. I understand that, because I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. And I want to just say that I think there is a there are like natural personalities. So like, your natural personality is probably pretty open, pretty maybe like extroverted or comfortable kind of speaking in front of groups.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you have access to your voice in those moments when things are tricky.
100%.
Or that doesn't mean that you don't still kind of live under a trauma spell.
Yeah.
And this is why I call it a trauma spell, because it's a little bit like a secret. Like, you don't even know you're under it, and other people don't necessarily know you're under it. It's what's happening on the inside in those moments of intensity, or in those moments of threat. So that's part of what's tricky about it.
That, all of that was so on point. I feel like I couldn't have like explained my experience better than that. That was literally exactly what it is. So I have another question. So for people that are currently experiencing sexual abuse, or have experienced it, what advice would you give them to support them to have For people that are currently experiencing sexual, emotional, and physical abuse, what advice would you give them to support them to have healthy sex lives after trauma? And it's kind of like, what needs to happen in between? So what needs to happen in between the recognition of, okay, what has happened or what is happening is not healthy, I want to eventually get to a healthy space, what needs to be happening in the between space?
Well, let's go back and talk about the reclaiming our no, because that's a big piece, and reclaiming your voice. You know, one of the big things, I mean, that question's a big question.
Yeah.
That question is like, you know, there's so many things, and I actually have a whole map of reclamation for each of the ways that we experience interpersonal violation, what we're reclaiming. So,
And we can definitely like
reclaiming worthiness.
We can definitely, I would 100% put links to your website as well, so people can get in contact with you directly.
Yeah, totally. So basically, like, there's a ton of stuff that we reclaim after trauma, mm-hmm. from worthiness to sovereignty to whole self-expression, justice, liberation, empowered safety, nurturance, clarity, choice. But I think one of the biggest things that helps you get from a place of, okay, I have trauma, to, okay, I can reengage in safe, emotionally and physically safe sex, is that knowing that you will stay with yourself, mm-hmm. that you won't override what your body wants. And so there's lots of things involved with that, right? There's one, being able to read what's happening in your body, being able to read when you're a yes and when you're a no. Mm-hmm. So it's the first thing to cultivate is this, do I actually, like, do I want this or not?
Yeah. And can I just pause you there just to kind of give an example of when I've had to do that? So about 4 years ago, I decided not to have sex anymore just because it was a lot to manage. And it was because of that reason. I wasn't able to identify if I actually wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. And I found myself in a lot of positions where I was like, am I here because I want to be here? Or am I here because I think this is what is supposed to happen next? So I had to work on working out when I wanted to, or like what my body was telling me, if that makes sense. So that has taken me a very long time to kind of just even identify what a yes feels like and what a no feels like intuitively before it leaves my mouth, and then I say yes or I say no.
Yeah, so that's one of the things, like one of the keys around this, and you saying like you stopped having sex is a great example, is where can you practice in a safe space, mm-hmm. what's the safe space that you can practice the difficult thing in, mm-hmm. so that when you're in the hard space, the difficult thing is easier.
Yeah.
So it goes back to using your voice. Mm-hmm. And so one of the practices that I do with people is called a boundaries and belonging game.
Yeah.
And you can play this with a best friend, mm-hmm. where you practice saying no to each other. Well, you practice basically asking each other questions. So like, for example, I might say to you, like, hey, will you give me $1 million?
Yeah.
And you pause and you notice what happens in your body to a question that the answer is obviously no. Mm-hmm. Like, really consider it, like, as if I were really asking you, hey, you owe me $1 million. Will you give it to me?
No. I know what you mean. Yeah, because you're just like, well, why would I give it to you? Like, why do I need to give you this money? And it's that kind of like the ownership of whether I'm going to give it to you because you've asked me to, or if I'm going to give it to you because I feel obliged to.
Right. So you start with the more obvious questions, where it's like an obvious no. Mm-hmm. And then you move into more tricky territory where mm-hmm. you would say something like, hey, would you have me on your podcast once a month? Or every week or something.
Yeah.
Something that's a little trickier, where you would have to really feel for the yes and no.
Yeah.
So you start asking the questions and you do it with your best friend, who's like a safe person to practice with. Yeah. And then when someone says no to you, so you say no back to me again, I would say, thanks for taking care of yourself. So part of what gets built in is an expectation that when you say no, people respect you.
Yeah.
So that way, again, when you get into an environment and let's say somebody's asking for something from you that you're a no to, mm-hmm. one, you're entrained to say no. Mm-hmm. Two, you expect people to respect your no. And three, if you feel uncomfortable either saying no or worrying that they won't respect it, now you know something is off here. Yeah. So this should definitely be a no, because I don't feel safe saying it and I don't necessarily know that they will respect me.
Yeah.
So anyone that you even fear saying no to, for me, is an automatic no.
Yeah, 100%.
That fear to say no is its own red flag.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing advice, literally. Like that, that is such good advice. And I wish I could have had that before, but like now we're here and it's amazing for everyone else that is getting it. That is literally amazing. My next question.
Yeah, wait, real quick.
Yeah.
There's I made a little 10-minute video explaining how to play that game. So I'll make sure you get that so you can link that.
100. I will definitely do that. Another thing that I've struggled with, and I know a lot of people have just from what they've said, is how do you then reconnect with your body, like your sensuality? Because it's like, I also went through a phase of not trying to be sexy because I wasn't trying to find myself in any like situations that could end badly for me. So I say went through a phase, going through a phase. So yeah, it's one of those things where I'm very mindful of the fact that like I don't, like say for example, I don't wear low cut tops or anything like that. And I'm not saying you're connecting with your sensuality is about the way how you dress. I know it's an inward thing, but how do you kind of like take your body back and kind of reconnect with your sexuality in a way that is for you and not for anybody else?
I love that. Yeah, I ran a little mini free course once called My Pleasure Practice.
Okay.
And it was basically about this, and it's just the question, what is, like, I like the word consensual because yeah. it has sensual in it. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's really important to start learning, it goes back to everything we've been talking about, when we have histories of trauma, is how to be in consent with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to relearning your sensuality, we live in such a culture of force, even in our self-development and healing industries. There's this like, I've got to do my jade egg practices, or I'm not good enough. I have to do my breath work every day, or I'm not good enough. I have to meditate every day, blah, 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 blah. But it's not necessarily, like, force isn't consensual. So the number one thing around relearning and reconnecting to sensuality and doing it for you is making sure you're actually honoring what your body wants.
Yeah.
So that's the first step. The second step would be to say, okay, what are the things that delight my senses? Mm-hmm. Smell, touch, sound, taste, sight. What are the things that just feel delicious for my body to consume? And what's the amount that feels doable for me? And so I like to do just like 5-minute practices. And one of my key ways in to all of this is I record myself saying, I love you for 5 minutes. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Or I just say, I love you out loud for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And in saying, I love you, I feel for, well, what would I love you do right now? Would it put a song on and dance? Would it lather some coconut oil? Would it eat an orange really slowly? Would it, you know, breathe really deeply? Mm-hmm. Would I, with this, I love you, I love you, I love you, have the desire to touch myself in a sexual way, mm-hmm. or to give myself a breast massage? So actually attuning to the energy of I love myself. So what would I like to receive sensually right now
yeah.
from the senses? Mm-hmm. And let that be your guide point.
Yeah. I'm just like basking in that. That is actually like another amazing point. So for a takeaway. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I've started to read Women's Bodies and Women's Health by Dr. Christine Northrup.
You know what? I never have.
No. And I read it and I've read a bit of it, and it's one of those ones where you read and you're like, oh my God, this is a lot, and I put it down. I tend to do that quite a bit. I like the kind of thing about you were saying, if this is a lot for you, then put it away and come back to it. Like, that's where I'm at with that book, because in the first chapter it goes in terms of like how women see their bodies through the patriarchy. Mm. But there was a point that she made about how your body, the pain that shows up in your body connected to your trauma. And you did talk about this with your vulva at the beginning, but there's an example in the book that she gives about a woman who is consistently bleeding, like throughout the whole year. She's just bleeding. She's going to her gynecologist and they can't find a reason for why she is bleeding. And they give her medication, they try and stop it, and it doesn't stop. And then she mentions that her husband is an alcoholic, and she doesn't explicitly use the word rape or anything like that, but she kind of just says that he kind of like takes out his frustrations on her sexually. And then when she kind of mentioned that to the doctor was like, well, that could be a reason why your body is reacting in the way that it's reacting. And at that point I was like, oh my God, because I think I mentioned this in the previous podcast. I think it was the Situationships episode about when I was having sex some years ago. There was one person who afterwards I used to be in so much pain, physical pain. And I now know that, like, that was not something that I was supposed to be in, and that's never happened to me before. But that was my body connecting to the trauma and the pain from that situation and, like, telling me this is not where you need to be. So my question is, how do you connect the pain in your body to your lived trauma experiences?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Mm-hmm. So I have a little map that I've made around this, and it's basically four concentric circles. And it's this idea that pain in the body is actually a signal to the brain for the brain to send the white blood cells to that part of the body so that the healing can happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's the function of pain in your body, is to signal to your brain, this needs to be healed. Mm-hmm. So, however, if pain is too overwhelming for the body to manage, it can go into that freeze state. So there are four concentric circles in this little map of what I like to call from trauma to turn on. And the outside circle is numb. It's dissociation. It's what your body naturally does if the pain is too big to bear.
Okay.
So it goes numb on the outside, then pain on the next layer in. Mm-hmm. After pain, like, you have two options from pain. From pain, you either have the option of numbing because it's too big to bear, or feeling through and healing. Mm-hmm. The challenge that I've found with a lot of people is the feeling through process. The feelings that people have to feel are shame, rage, and grief.
Yeah.
And those are three of the hardest experiences to feel through successfully. So especially if something is ongoing, you might have ongoing rage that feels unsafe. So because it's unsafe to be angry, you just go back into numb. And yeah, you go back and forth between pain, numb, pain, numb, pain, numb, until you have the capacity to successfully employ your rage that gets you out, right? That the fight or flight that frees you.
Okay.
Similarly, tangentially, if it's not an ongoing or current thing, the shame or the grief might be a lot to handle. Mm-hmm. You might not know how to process it or how to move through it. You might feel afraid that if you go into it, you'll never get out of it, which is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why people don't feel it. And so again, they go out into numb. But if you can transform, which is feel through and, like, release essentially, rage, shame, and grief, you can get to the center concentric circle, which is pleasure, possibility, gratitude, meaning making. Like, it's when we've moved through our shame, rage, and grief that we actually start to sometimes feel like, huh, maybe all that shit that happened had a reason, which is not to, you know, bypass or say, like, everything happens for a reason. But often what I see happen for people is when they move through shame, rage, and grief, all of a sudden there's a feeling of possibility, hope, expansion, and also kind of like life purpose and meaning starts to form.
And I think that you're saying that, and I completely agree. And I think that's something that I've kind of been through, that did you say shame, rage, and grief? And come to the other side, but then not felt completely happy that I'm there. So you're saying that the other side of that is like purpose, and it's like, well, maybe some of this happened for a reason. It's like that, those thoughts have come into my mind, but at the same time, I'm still kind of on the edge of like, but why did that need to happen? So I'm still kind of like on one side of them, like, yeah. Now I'm in a space where I can have these conversations, and I can empathize with people, and I can hear that someone's been through sexual trauma, and I completely understand where they're coming from, and there's a reason why I can do that. But at the same time, I still haven't resolved the whole kind of like, but why did that happen to me type thing. And I don't know if that's just another,
totally,
like a time thing and a process that will eventually happen. And then if you ever completely come out of it and you're completely on the, cause it's not, I don't think for me at this stage, and I can only talk for myself, I don't think for me it's about being a victim. And that's something that I've completely actually worked on, like not viewing myself as a child anymore, but viewing myself as an adult who has come through these things, who is now doing the work and, growing as a person. But it's almost like that imprint still is in the back of my mind and will resurface every now and then. So does it ever go away, or is it something that you can learn to manage in a healthy way?
Yeah. I love that question. And I also love what you're saying here about how, you know, in some places you feel like you're in the center of the circle and in other places you don't. Mm-hmm. And that's really normal. Mm-hmm. And also this idea of like moving in and out, mm-hmm. it's not something where you're like, great, I'm in the middle and I'm done. I feel like I'm hearing that there's still unresolved anger and rage. And to answer the question, right, because like the why me is usually anger and rage.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is great, which is valid. Like there's tons to be angry and mad about in the world, but also when you're still kind of affected by whatever happened, of course there's going to be anger. So the question, like, does this ever change? What I know from my personal experience is I'm in a very, very different place. Mm-hmm. I don't personally, with what happened to me, have really anger or rage anymore, like, period. That said, my story is different than other people's stories. Yeah. My process is different. My intersecting identities are different, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So I have seen a lot of people get to a place where they're like, I'm not really angry anymore, mm-hmm. for myself. But also, am I angry in general? Yeah, there's a lot to be angry about in the world. I get really angry when I hear about childhood molestation. Mm-hmm. I get really angry when I hear about genital mutilation. Like, anger, there's no place on the map that is bad. You know, it's all valuable. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that we can work through and transform those more difficult emotions, use them as fuel. Mm-hmm. So it's like the anger doesn't become something that stops me or that gets me spinning in a fight or flight that I can't use. Mm-hmm. It's something that fuels my momentum to respond to the pain, mm-hmm. right? It's like, oh, I feel rage because there's pain.
Yeah.
And I'm going to heal the pain. Mm-hmm. So it actually motivates and inspires me now, as opposed to spiraling me.
So that's kind of like an alchemy type thing. It's kind of you're taking one yes. thing and you're making, you're transmuting? Is that the word? I don't know. I don't think
yeah.
I made up.
Yeah.
Transmuting it into something else. It's becoming something else in order to drive you instead of hold you back. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, anger is totally valuable.
Yeah.
It's just difficult when we are spinning in it and don't know how to transmute it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much once again. We do have a question. So we did have a voice note that was sent in from one of our listeners, and we're going to play it in now. So if you just take a listen.
Question for sex after trauma is it common for people who have had trauma in their sexuality to experience sex that can feel like totally perfect and amazing and connected on all levels, and libido is there and like desire is there and it's all there, and then the next time it's like gone, totally gone, however, like whatever witchcraft I use to like access that beautiful part of my sexuality vanishes, and I'm just back to being like cold and numb and confused. Does that sound common? Thank you.
I first of all, I love this feature you just did. That's so super cool technologically. But yeah, so to respond to the question, super normal. Really want to normalize that experience. So one of the things that's really crucial in healing our sexual trauma is an idea of expansion and contraction, mm-hmm. the tidal nature of life, the out and the in. And this isn't just about healing our trauma, but this is also how we grow as humans. So when we're in utero and we're just these little babies, we start to develop our hands and our arms and our legs. And what happens is we sort of crunch in. It's like we do cat-cow in utero, mm-hmm. where we like scrunch in real small and then we expand real wide. And then we scrunch in real small and we expand real wide. Mm-hmm. And the same applies to all of our healing work. This idea that life is tidal, that we have to expand and contract. So to have a really connected sexual experience, if that's uncommon for you or if that's something you're still working your way into, that's a really big expansion. And one thing that might help your ability to kind of consistently be in that expansion state in sex is to allow yourself to really cocoon afterward, mm-hmm. and to contract and to go in on purpose and to say, that was a huge deal. I'm feeling great. And can I wrap myself in blankets for a few hours or for the next day or two? Can I do things that are really inward, that really protect and honor the preciousness of this expanding birthing self? Because if I can protect and honor the preciousness, then that preciousness will feel safe to expand again in its own timing. Mm-hmm. So there's two pieces here. One is around remembering that contraction's normal and on purpose, kind of amping up your cocooning and your contracting. The second is that we can't necessarily control our tide, our expansion and contraction. One way we can help it is by doing the contraction. Mm-hmm. But also, it's a natural rhythm, like the ocean, like the waves come in and the waves go out. And some people have longer waves,
yeah.
and other people have shorter waves. And so just honoring your natural rhythm is also, you know, plays into the idea of being in consent with yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's very powerful. Thank you so much again, Rachel. I don't want to, we're kind of coming towards the end of the podcast now, and I want you to, I came to know you via Instagram. A lot of the people that I meet that are on this podcast tends to be via Instagram, and that was via your fundraiser for the book that you're writing, Sex After Trauma. So congratulations on getting your fundraising goal. That was like so sick. It happened really, really quickly, and I was just like, oh my gosh, you got the money. The book is coming. How is that going? Have you started to write the book already?
I have. It's going really, really well. I'm just loving the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you already have a book, don't you?
Yes. I wrote a book called Secret Bad Girl, mm-hmm. and that's a sexual trauma memoir and resolution guide. Really potent little book that people tell me all the time they sit down to read and then just don't put it down until they finish it. But this second book, Sex After Trauma, is... there's lots of stories in it because I believe lots of beautiful healing stories, actually, because I believe that stories are such medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a three-part process of what are your seeds of desire? What's the thing you really want that even brought you to this scary territory? And then like all seeds, for them to grow into new life, you have to plant them underground. And it's in the underworld, in underground, where we look at and examine what's been kind of made toxic in your soil.
Mm-hmm.
And I give lots and lots and lots of practices and stories around reclamation, reclaiming the health of your soil and your seeds. And then with that newfound health, we can emerge into the third part of the book, which is crossing the threshold into what I like to call heaven on earth,
mm-hmm.
right relationships, right embodiment, and right identity. And all of those things lead to right sexuality. So that's sort of a nutshell of the book.
That sounds amazing. And when is that going to be released? What are we, the date?
In the fall 2018.
Okay. Looking forward to that. forward to that. Definitely will be getting a
copy.
So thank you so much, Rachel. And thank you. I want to also say thank you for accepting this call to purpose, because it's, I can't say that I've come across other women or other people that are actually doing work specifically within sexual trauma and, you know, the work after that. So I think it's a very brave thing to do, to kind of just accept that call and then, you know, research and delve deep into the emotional work that needs to happen for you in order for you to even be able to kind of do this work with so many women. It's very necessary. And I've just learned so much just from this podcast. And I know that even though like I've interviewed you, I'm going to listen back to this a few times and make notes and just kind of just like see like what I can take from it to kind of help me kind of go through to the next phase of my kind of like sexual life. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me and doing the brave work of putting this podcast out. It was my pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. And just before we go, can you let people know where they can find you on social media and your website?
Yeah, totally. I love Instagram. It's just at Rachel Maddox with the RACHAEL. And then my website's rachelmaddox.com. I have a Facebook page, Rachel Maddox Coaching. Those are the places I mostly hang out.
Cool. And we'll definitely put all of those in the show notes too. So thank you again and have a great day.